for the have qualification.
To make it legal.
Mr. Chairman, I think you just said what I was going to say. Let's make legal what they're already doing.
Okay.
That's right.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hammerstedt.
What's the formulary that nurse practitioners currently operate under?
Representative Katulski and Representative Hammerstedt, the formulary established in 1979 by the then advisory council, which was set up in that statute, and subsequently that statute's been revised, that there is, in fact, a nurse practitioner prescription writing council made up of two doctors, two nurse practitioners, and two pharmacists, and one RN from the Board of Nursing. They establish a formulary or list of drugs that are within the scope of practice of each nurse practitioner based on their educational background and type of practice, and they are restricted to that formulary or that list of drugs as far as their prescription writing.
Does it include the drugs that are on the list, the 1 through 5s?
No, the statute bars Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 does list some limited, I believe, 3s, 4s, and 5s, but there's an outright bar on 1s and 2s and most of the 3s. You primarily are talking about, again, cough medications with codeine, maybe a codeine base, some antibiotics, and so forth.
We'll do it.
Thank you.
Okay, further discussion.
I'm uncertain myself on this. It is my understanding that nurse practitioners cannot dispense any kind of medications, be they samples or not, unless they live in an area where there's no access to a pharmacist, and that the intent of that was to maintain that double check within the medication system so that if there was indeed some kind of a medication error made, that you would still have maintained that system where there's a check out there. I believe that was the intent, and I don't believe that any nurse practitioner in Representative Carter's district could dispense any kind of medications right now, legally.
Right. This is the Brian and Ruth show.
Again, in answer to the question and the statement, I believe there is an occurrence out there currently in which nurse practitioners are, and you can use the term dispense, whatever, but in fact are supplying sample drugs and have been. It continues to be our interpretation that the original statute under the definition of dispensing in 678.375 was not intended to cover that particular piece or situation. The thing that I find, again, interesting is that there is no bar, again, from a nurse practitioner writing a prescription for something in their formulary, but they cannot, in fact, then give a sample drug to that same client when the client could not afford that same medication. And there's no bar against, or as the previous speaker just indicated, there's no, if she's looking for a check and balance of every time a prescription is writing somebody else, for example, a pharmacist checking to make sure there's no medication there, no other practitioner, including doctors, have that kind of check. So why are nurse practitioners signaled out as the only ones that need, in fact, that check?
Okay, any further comments, questions, concerns? We have a motion before us. So we'll call for the question. I assume there's some objection. I heard Representative Pickard, you do object to this.
That was an objection.
Okay. So would you call the roll?
Representative Shabrat?
No.
Representative Bethelman?
Aye.
Representative Carter?
Aye.
Representative Ford?
Aye.
Representative Hamilton?
Aye.
Representative French?
Aye.
Nope.
Mr. Chair.
Nope. Just a vote.
The vote is 5-3.
Okay. The amendment passes. See how democratic a chair can be even if he disagrees with the issue?
Yeah.
All right. Do we have any other amendments to this little gem that folks want to deal with? If not, are we okay on it? If so, now what we've done is, you remember, you all remember the original bill, right? Did a very similar thing.
I think so.
That was the tree under the ornaments.
Right. Okay, so the chair will entertain a motion for the bill as amended.
Wait to see what the Senate does with this.
Chair, move the bill as amended.
Representative Carter moves Senate Bill 336, A. Engrossed, as further amended by this committee, to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call for the question?
Representative Bandura.
Aye.
Representative Carter.
Aye.
Representative Ford.
Aye.
Representative French.
Aye.
Representative Hammerstedt.
Aye.
Representative Picker.
Aye.
Representative Shiprath.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 336, as amended, sent to the floor with the due pass recommendation, subject to form and style of legislative council.
Carrier?
Who would like to carry this little gem?
I have a nomination.
One of the guys on the end.
Only guys on the end? Who would you like to nominate, Representative Picker?
I was thinking of the lady on your left.
My far left?
As far as you want to go.
That's Representative Bandura.
Okay, Representative Carter, do you mind carrying the bill?
What a vote explanation.
Representative Ford, vote explanation.
Okay, I do support the bill. I voted on the last amendment reluctantly. And I did vote for it because I think it's the right policy. But unfortunately, I prefer to have a policy like that added to a bill whose the intention of which was something entirely different, that I wish it could have had a hearing where we could have heard from the parties rather than have it come up in a work session.
The chair would agree with you, Representative Ford. But when things get close to the end, you know.
I know. That's why I voted for it.
Just imagine how Friday's going to be when they know it's the last day of the committee and.
I got to get way through tomorrow.
Right.
To Friday.
Okay, we will open the hearing on. Not you, Bob. Because I've got this note here. You'd like to be first, but when we started, you weren't here.
Well, we have a witness from Jackson County.
Okay, so why don't we bring you and your witness on up here on the bill, 631? Bob, what bill are you in here on?
It's a long ago, I forgot.
512.
Oh, okay.
And I guarantee we'll get one soon.
Okay. Ed.
I was directed by Gordon to come up.
Okay.
Oh.
Did you do that?
No, the other one, Colts.
Oh. All right, gentlemen, we're in a public hearing on 631. Who wants to begin?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Gilmore. I'm director of the Jackson County Human Services Department in Medford. And I want to thank you for putting this bill ahead of the final bill. See, I came here from Connecticut less than a year ago, and in Connecticut you can get anywhere in the state in 45 minutes. The size of Oregon is still an adjustment for me. In speaking in favor of this bill, I'm representing several groups. First and foremost, Jackson County. The mental health directors of both Josephine and Douglas County, and the Association of Oregon Mental Health Directors. The cost of providing emergency care to psychiatric patients placed on emergency hold is of growing concern to many Oregon counties, particularly those in Southern Oregon. Since we do not have ready access to state facilities, we must use local hospitals to provide psychiatric treatment pending admission to a state facility.
Mr. Chairman, pardon me, I can't hear the witness.
Mike. Is that Mike dead or alive? Oh, it sounds alive.
I'll try this one. As a mental health provider, we have a responsibility to provide needed psychiatric care and treatment to those in need, regardless of their ability to pay. We do not feel that we have a responsibility to also pay for unrelated medical treatment out of existing and limited mental health funds. Other programs exist for this purpose. Jackson, Josephine, and Douglas counties, in that order, rank number 1, 2, and 3 in the per capita cost in providing treatment to patients on emergency hold. During the current fiscal year, we estimate that the emergency hold will cost Jackson County 88% of all local tax dollars allocated for all local mental health programs. Of that amount, we estimate that as much as 20% will be used for tests and treatment not related to the patient's psychiatric condition. This bill would correct that situation and, in effect, make the counties responsible only for treatment related to or as a result of the psychiatric condition. This bill has the support of the Oregon Mental Health Directors Association, the Association of Oregon Counties, and the Board of Commissioners of the three Southern Oregon counties. We ask your support in passing this bill.
Okay, a question for you, John, and maybe we'll get that answer. Another testimony about it, I ask you real quick. What happens to these folks if you're not going to do anything with them?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we feel that we have a responsibility to provide the psychiatric treatment. We are a mental health program, and we feel that there are other programs already in existence that can provide for medical treatment not related to the psychiatric condition.
Are there other programs? Are these people going to be out on the street or what?
No, many have third-party coverage, Blue Cross Blue Shield. Title 19 also pays for coverage. Medicare pays for coverage.
All right. So it's not that we're just abandoning these folks to wander the streets?
No, sir.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm Barry Cass from the Mental Health Division, and you should have testimony from our administrator, pardon me, Kevin Concannon. Our paramount interest here is in preserving the access to local inpatient care for the mentally ill who fall within the statute, Chapter 426. This bill has undergone a change in the Senate, and I think there are further amendments pending that would further define in statute the costs that would be the responsibility of the county once state funds are exhausted. And our interest here is in assuring that the critical decision regarding the site of emergency care is not based on restricted revenues. Now, in the past, the statute has been unclear about the kinds of costs that needed to be covered, and the bill as it's currently before you would have the Mental Health Division preparing administrative rules that would define those costs related specifically to the psychiatric emergency and the stabilization of the patient, excluding those non-related physical care costs. Currently in the statute, because it is vague, we have an open budget line, and I think this is what gives rise to the concern of Oregon's counties with respect to this particular chapter. It's my understanding there is an amendment pending that would further clarify this. But
right. I believe members of the committee have the amendment in front of them.
The Mental Health Division would support such an amendment. We support either the bill as it's currently before you or the bill as amended.
Okay. Ed?
Mr. Chair, may I disturb you just a minute to ask you where we have the amendment?
Go ahead.
Oh, I thought he was speaking. I thought he spoke of this as he addressed us.
This is the amendment we're talking about, right? The Community Mental Health Program Director's Amendments?
Right. Yes.
Okay. It's the only amendments I have in front of me at this point.
Well, I thought he was speaking to that as he spoke. I thought he was addressing this amendment.
No, he was addressing the original bill.
Mr. Chairman, if I might address, Gordon Fultz with the Community Mental Health Program Directors. This amendment we gave to your staff yesterday and had it drafted by council. This represents an agreement between the mental health directors, the mental health division, and the hospital association being the primary parties of interest to this bill that we're aware of, in language that they have all agreed to, and we can explain that at appropriate time. Basically, what it does is further define the word cost to suggest that only those psychiatric services and the services related to or resulting from that psychiatric condition will be paid for. That's a limitation of lesser degree, if you will, than the cost language, but it's one that we accept as agreeable between the three parties, and that's what the amendment does.
I'll move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Well, do you want to give Ed a chance to talk to it first, or no?
No.
Okay, Representative Shiprack moves the amendment. Discussion?
Yes, question. All right, wait a minute.
Call for a question? No.
No.
I'd like to ask those two a question.
Who?
Those gentlemen in the testimony.
Sure. Yeah.
Who picks up the tab?
We're not in work session, by the way.
Representative Pickard, under existing legislation, the tab is picked up by county general fund dollars. The county, under existing legislation, is required to pay what's commonly called last dollar for cost patients on emergency hold. Those costs are first paid by state funds made available for that purpose. County general fund dollars pick up the balance. In Jackson County, the state provides us slightly over $34,000 to meet the cost of emergency holds. This year, the total cost of the program will probably exceed $300,000. The balance comes from county tax dollars.
I would suggest you're holding too long.
That's bad joke. But under this legislation, then, how would that change?
The county would be responsible only for psychiatric costs and treatments related to the psychiatric condition.
And who would be responsible for the...
We're responsible for the entire bill, which we estimate that probably 20% of our costs are for treatments not related to the psychiatric condition.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Representative Pickard, let me try and respond a little bit. What we have had, what we're doing here, is we're leaving the same situation in terms of who pays. The state gives us money, and then we run out of that. The county general fund is expected to pick that up. What we're doing with this legislation is trying to narrow the amount that's paid for by either ones to only that which results from the psychiatric condition. What we have had and what we've experienced is bills from hospitals that have a number of other items that we feel are unrelated to either the psychiatric condition or resulting from that psychiatric condition. We're trying to limit this to just that which is in those conditions, and that's the language we've agreed to. So it doesn't take anybody off the hook for paying it. We still have that responsibility. It just narrows what we have to pay for. And hopefully with this legislation, there will be an understanding with the hospitals, and the counties, and the state as to what's paid for.
Another question?
Representative Bigger?
Could it be considered a cost containment bill? Or is that just a word we'd prefer not to use?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it could be a cost refinement. Better word. I don't think containment. What we're saying here that we will continue to pay under certain circumstances for these kinds of things, and that we feel is will be narrower than what now exists. Currently, if a person is in the emergency hold status, and if they injure themselves, now we would consider that resulting from that condition. But if while they're there, we discover they have, or the hospital discovers that they have a kidney problem and they need an operation, potentially that surgery could be done and the county could be billed for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a couple of experiences in that kind. So we're trying to say here that would not be resulting from that psychiatric condition and need not be paid for through the funds we're talking about. That's what we're trying to do. So I would say a limitation, not a containment as such.
Mr. Chairman?
Another question, Representative Pickard.
We haven't heard from the gentleman from the Hospital Association.
Well, we're going to get to that. But Gordon, before we get to Mr. Patterson, cost ship, not cost savings, not whatever the other term you're talking about, cost ship, I think is the appropriate term.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I'll accept it.
A refinement was okay.
Right, refinement, yeah, right. Ed, you please.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ed Patterson, representing the Oregon Association of Hospitals, and I'm glad that these long 5 months you have been so perceptive, because that was a concern we had about the bill as it passed the Senate. And I wanted to clarify and certainly get on the record that we could not support the bill as it did pass the Senate, because it's exactly what would have happened. It would have caused additional cost shift, would have increased our uncompensated care burden, which represents 19% on the average of all hospital bills now. And that was our concern. and we deliberated with the county's representative and the Mental Health Association's representatives, and came up with this language which we are now supportive of. And I would like for the committee to understand that it certainly is our association's understanding that the language will be interpreted literally, so that any time that one of our hospitals has a psychiatric hold patient, and if there is some condition that the patient may have, as an example, physically injured himself because of a psychiatric condition, and sometimes unfortunately they do, and they're treated at the hospital, then that is a legitimate charge and needs to be paid by the funds allocated by the statute. Or if indeed the patient has some other physical impairment that has been created and needs to be credited to as psychiatric condition, then that's a legitimate charge. So it's our intent certainly to support the bill as it is proposed to be amended, and would certainly hope that the committee would make sure that that is a legislative intent and put that on the record also.
Okay, so if I'm looking at this language, resulting from such psychiatric condition, if the person has inflicted an injury on himself, that would be covered. If he came in with the measles, it would not be.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I suspect that would be the correct interpretation. There are persons who suffer from psychosis who maybe attempt suicide, maybe self-mutilation, and those kinds of things. We think that that is the intent of the statute, to cover those types of things, and certainly should not be something that would be refused to be covered, because it's not it is related to the psychiatric condition, and that's what our intent is.
But measles is not.
Measles would not be.
If you treated him for measles, that's part of your uncompensated care.
That's correct. I'm not sure if anybody's hospitalized over measles now. But
I could use some other more deadly examples.
Yes, that's true. I realize it's late, but a couple of things. I think there's something that maybe we haven't really discussed, and this committee needs to understand. As an example, a representative from the mental health group indicated to me that there is $1.8 million appropriated for this type of services to the mental health division, and that is then parceled out to the counties for these kinds of costs. And then locally, the Mental Health Association indicated to me that there are some $371,000 to $471,000 that come out of county funds to pay for these additional charges. The allegation is made that perhaps there are medical services provided by hospitals to these patients that's not related to the psychiatric condition or a result of that, and we are unable to determine as a hospital association whether that's true or not. But I think the point is that if indeed the problem is related to a shortfall in budgetary allocations for these types of patients, then that should be a focus of legislators and certainly persons like ourselves who are involved with that. There should be additional appropriation for that. We are willing to cooperate and certainly help reduce the cost of the counties if there are inappropriate medical services being provided. But other than that, a logical solution to me would be perhaps some strong lobbying to get additional funds appropriated for these local communities.
Yeah, at the same time, in our short conversation yesterday, your organization doesn't want to help us get that extra money this session.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's another issue.
Right, I just also wanted to point that out. Any further questions for these gentlemen?
If not, answer the questions.
Huh? No, I don't have a question. I want to comment. The question, I guess, would be why, but I think I know the explanation to that. Okay, we're in work session on this bill. Representative Carter moves the amendments to Senate Bill 631. Discussion? Objection? Amendments are accepted. Representative Hammerstadt moves Senate Bill 631 as amended to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. Come on, folks. We're going to be here forever. Discussion? Would you call the roll, Ben?
Representative Hip Hart.
Aye.
Representative Ford.
Aye.
Representative Frank.
Aye.
Representative Hammerstadt.
Aye.
Representative Picker.
Aye.
Representative Benjamin.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye. Senate Bill 631 moved to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Everybody here voted, did they? Okay. Representative Van Loon, I'm going to give you this bill to carry. You haven't carried enough bills for this committee.
You just gave me one the other day.
I know. I'm going to work you hard these last few weeks.
Pick up.
Well, my heart just makes that beat.
Mine doesn't either.
Well, we'll get together beforehand and get pumped up about this, please.
Okay. Bob, you're here for 512, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, why don't you come on up?
Thank you.
We'll open up the public hearing on 512.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Van Huff from United Seniors. I hope the committee will not be offended or felt slighted if I fail to provide any written amendments or any Attorney General's opinions. The bill you have before you, as it came from the House, provides that an individual in a nursing home or the nursing home itself may provide a locker for an individual to keep their personal possessions in with a lock, and a duplicate key would be given to the administrator of the hospital. The second provision in this bill prohibits a nursing home from requiring a patient to waive their rights in regard to liability in the event that the nursing home is negligent in the care of property or personal possessions, you see. The bill, as it has been passed out of the Senate as amended, comes to you without any opposition at this time. United Seniors are supporting of it. The Senior Service Division supports it. The nursing home industry supports it. Agencies for Home and Aged support it. And so I offer to you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as a bill without resistance, which we hope that you can dispose of between now and 6:35.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Any questions to Bob? Representative Pickard?
No, not a question.
Comment?
Comment, yes. I note that you and I are two members of the committee who signed on to this bill, and I recall the exact case in Portland where the sister of one of my constituents had a problem with lost personal items that she had no recourse or very little for, and this would go a long way towards solving that kind of personal problem. It, to me, is worthwhile, certainly not threatening to those people who run the homes, and a right of personal privilege, I would think.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Shipwreck.
Bob. Maybe it's because I'm in a real bad mood this afternoon.
I got to ask this. Bob, is there a prohibition in these places now for a person to have a personal safe, little box with a lock on it?
Many of them say they can't afford to do it.
No, I mean a personal. I own it.
Yeah. You do now, and you set it on your dresser, and you come by a day later, and somebody has stolen your false teeth or your wristwatch or your jewelry, and away it goes, you see.
They stole the whole box?
They might.
Or your Listerine.
Or your Listerine.
The bottle.
I mean, it's really surprising the things which are stolen, and I think sometimes people forget that this is really the residence of these people, and it's where they live. And we tried to make it so that it was flexible enough that the individual can provide a locker or the nursing home can provide a locker. There was a void, really, in the law. Representative Ray.
Never mind. I think that this really is getting nitpicky to have a bill like this.
Well, Representative Shipwreck.
But it's a Senate bill, and
No. Representative Shipwreck, if you take a look at the second page, I mean, if what you're saying is that it's nitpicky to have this bill because this ought to already be there for folks.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I don't know what would prohibit a person. I just want to know if there's a prohibition, if I lived there, that I could own something with a lock on it
that I could do that with.
Well, even with this bill, if you take a look at the second page, line 13, you still have to have management's consent in order to have this locked container. And Mr. Powell is here, and maybe he would like to speak to it.
I'd like to know that. That's my question.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Powell representing the Oregon Healthcare Association, and we were involved, Mr. Van Hout and the members of the Senate committee, in working out the language in this bill, and would support it.
Can you answer my question, John?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shiprack, in most cases, I don't think there would be a prohibition. Part of the problem, the disappearance of items is a problem in all settings, be it healthcare or hotels, motels. Hotels, motels have a limit of their liability. In these settings, we get all kinds of problems. For example, we had in one facility somebody going around literally lifting false teeth and hiding them, just hiding them. And I mean, not too many people steal them to use. but it does happen that they get lifted. Now, we think that the provisions of this bill will allow for an orderly process for this to take place where